This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tim Kaine flips into the Virginia Senate race. Debbie Wasserman Schultz jumps up to the DNC chair, and the shutdown is still a toss-up. It's Wednesday and time for a deadline edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, well, except last week, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. This week, the president surprises no one by opening his run for re-election. Too close to call in a judicial election portrayed as a referendum in Wisconsin. A runoff for mayor in Sin City. Mrs. Goodman is the odds-on favorite. Big changes in Senate races in New Mexico, Arizona, and Virginia. But the news is dominated this week by the high-stakes showdown over the budget. More on that in a bit with columnist Michael Gerson. Later in the program, we continue a series of conversations on the huge federal debt. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. And Ken, welcome back.
Thank you, Neil. Last week, for the record, I was at member stations in Idaho and Oklahoma. It was very, very good meetings. And so that's why I wasn't just goofing off or something like that, unlike now when I'm really goofing off. But I want you to know that if there were a government shutdown, one of the major things would be the ending of the trivia question.
And that would be no way you could have it. Well, we do have a trivia question this week because the government is not shut down.
Oh, that's right. So here it is. Okay, it's kind of convoluted as always. But this one, the winner of this year's NCAA, or as once we heard on NPR, they once call it the NAACP tournament, which they really did. The winner of this year's NCAA men's championship game was UConn. Connecticut, of course, is the site of a Senate race next year when the seat of retiring independent Joe Lieberman is likely to go to a Democrat or Republican.
So okay? Switch parties.
Right, switch parties. Okay, so when was the last time a Senate seat from the state of the NCAA winner men's game in the men's final switch parties in the same year?
All right, so if you think you know the answer to this very convoluted question, your pens out, ladies and gentlemen. The last time a U.S. Senate seat from the state of the NCAA men's championship switched parties in the same year. On a Tuesday in a month with an R in it. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. So, Ken.
We don't just give away T-shirts for nothing.
You have to earn your T-shirt. Okay. But in any case, there's going to be several now more interesting Senate races, beginning with Virginia.
Well, yes, it's not a surprise, but yesterday Tim Kaine, the former governor of Virginia, who had been the DNC chair succeeding Howard Dean after President Obama was elected, he announced that he will jump into the Senate race that Democrat Jim Webb is giving up.
The race he said he was not going to enter.
Well, they always say that. I mean, President Obama said he wasn't running for president until he ran for president. But anyway, so he will be, all in likelihood, will be the Democratic nominee. Congressman Bobby Scott from Richmond has been talking about a possible run. But most likely, Tim Kaine will be the Democratic nominee. And I'm still not sure who the Republican is. It'll either be George Allen, the former governor and former senator, or Jamie Ratke, who is a Tea Party candidate.
And, of course, Tim Kaine has to step down from his job as chair of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. We have this email from our friend Mike Thompson, director of news at WOSU in Columbus, who said, Ken Rudin yesterday boldly guaranteed that Ted Strickland was going to be named DNC chairman.
Yes. Thank you, Mike. That is absolutely true. It was on WOSU, and I did say that. And the reason I thought it would happen is because, one, he was out of a job, and two, Ohio is critical. And of course, if Ted Strickland is not the most dynamic guy in the world, but this is a Democratic president. A DNC chair under a Democratic president doesn't have to be,
the White House is really the DNC.
Exactly. Right. But anyway, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who I did predict Strickland, but Schultz is good. She's great on TV. She's a tremendous fundraiser. She's very aggressive. And of course, she also comes from the swing state of Florida. Democrats are very excited about that.
Well, speaking of Florida.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Always
so
good. Always good to chip
Keep
in there.
Keep in touch, Mike.
George Lemieux, the temporary senator, is going to try to become a permanent senator.
Yes, and he, you know, during his 16 months in the Senate, he had a pretty conservative record, and he's running against Bill Nelson, who's seeking a third term, Democrat Bill Nelson of Florida, seeking a third term next year. But the problem that George Lemieux has is that he was appointed by his good friend, Charlie Crist. Now, once upon a time, Charlie Crist was a Republican.
And a kingmaker.
And a kingmaker, right. But then once Charlie Crist left the party to run as an independent, the conservatives just, you know, I mean, the thought of being called a Charlie Crist Republican is not what George Lemieux has to face. And but definitely Bill Nelson is on the list of most vulnerable Democrats in 2012.
In Arizona, meanwhile, Trent Franks opting not to run.
Yeah, he's a congressman. And again, conservatives, I mean, the Republican frontrunner there, this is for John Kyle's Senate seat, is Jeff Flake. He is very conservative, but not conservative enough on the issue of immigration for some folks. And some conservatives were looking at Trent Franks as a possible candidate, but Frank surprised people by saying he would not run.
And Martin Heinrich in New Mexico, he decided he will run for Senate.
Right. He's the congressman from the Albuquerque area. This is for the Jeff Bingaman Senate seat. He will be, by all intents and purposes, be the Democratic nominee, and he's perhaps favored. There will be, it looks like, a Republican free-for-all for that seat, including Heather Wilson and the lieutenant governor there and others.
And we had some actual votes cast yesterday, including, we'll get to Wisconsin in just a minute, but mayor of Las Vegas.
Right. Yesterday was the primary. Actually, it was the election. And if somebody had received 50%, there wouldn't have been a runoff. But Oscar Goodman had been the mayor for the last 12 years. A character, if you ever saw one, the former mob lawyer who really nobody ever heard of the mayor of Las Vegas until Oscar Goodman was elected in 1999. But he's term limited. And now is a big change ahead for Las Vegas. Mrs. Oscar Goodman led the primary yesterday with 37% of the vote, more than double of her closest opponent. But there's going to be a very nasty runoff in June. She accuses her opponent, who's also a female. She said her opponent doesn't understand education because she's never had children. You know this is going to be a very ugly race. June 7th runoff.
And quickly, the first referendum, if you will, on the situation in Wisconsin, where, of course, there's been a standoff for quite some time. And that was a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And one of the candidates was identified closely with the governor, who's less popular than he used to be.
Well, this is a guy, David Prosser, who was elected, who was appointed in 1998, elected in 2001 for a 10-year term. He was heavily favored to win another 10-year term. In the February primary, he had over 55% of the vote, but this is the Spanish Civil War. It was a proxy vote on Governor Walker's handling of collective bargaining and public employee unions. And the Democrat in that race, well, not the Democrat, it's a nonpartisan race, but David Prosser's opponent, Joanne Kloppenburg, was supposed to trail tremendously amount. And now, right as of now, she has a 311 vote lead. It will have a recount, but that's pretty remarkable.
That's an interesting result. In any case, we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia question. Again, it is the U.S. Senate seat that switched parties in the same year as a men's basketball team from that state won the NCAA championship.
What a stupid question. Who came up with that one?
Unbelievable. Let's see if we can start with, this is Bill, and Bill's with us from Kansas City.
Hi, guys.
Go ahead, please.
I think it is Jesse Helms, North Carolina.
Well, the last time North Carolina won, they won in 2009, and Jesse Helms wasn't up. I don't know the last time Jesse Helms, I mean, he won his seat in 72, which switched parties, and North Carolina didn't win the championship in 72, so it wouldn't be Jesse Helms.
Okay.
Oh, well.
Thanks, Bill. Let's see if we go next to Donald, and Donald's with us from Silver Spring in Maryland.
Hi. I believe it was my native state of Indiana when Indiana University won the men's basketball title in 76, and Vance Harkey was defeated for re-election by Richard Lugar.
Well, you're right about Indiana winning in 76, and you're right about Lugar being Harkey in 76. A good guess, but I'm looking for something much more recent.
Oh, shoot. Well, thank you.
Good guess.
Good try. Let's go next to this is Scott, and Scott with us from Rochester in Minnesota.
Hi, this is Scout in Rochester, Minnesota, and I believe that the last time that it was in Maryland.
University of Maryland won what in
2002. And there was no Senate race in Maryland in 2002.
Oh, well, how about UCLA?
What year?
Uh, probably in 62.
Well, I'm looking. First of all, there was no Senate change in 62 because, as you well remember, Thomas Kuchel was reelected in California in 62. But something much more recent than 1962.
Scott,
okay,
thanks very much. Let's see if we can go next to this is Todd. Todd with us from Tucson.
Yes, my guess is Michigan in 2000.
That is the correct answer.
Ding, ding, ding.
In 2000, Michigan, who they defeat? They defeated, They defeated, I can't remember who they defeated, but they won the championship in 2000. Michigan State won the championship in 2000, and Senator Spencer Abraham lost to Democratic challenger Debbie Stabenow. 2000 is the correct answer.
Thanks very much, Todd. We're going to put you on hold, collect your particulars, and we'll send you a Political Junkie No Prize T-shirt in exchange for your vow to send us a digital picture of yourself to post on our wall of shame.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, congratulations.
They actually understood the question.
Yeah, that's very good. In the meantime, Ken, a couple of sad passages to note this past week. Former Congressman John Adler.
Well, he was a one-term congressman from southern New Jersey. He died yesterday at 51 years old. Big shock. He was just 51 years old. Pretty sad. Very surprising.
Cherry Hill, they lost to other...
John Runyon, the Eagles lineman, right.
And then there was the loss of a name that many people may not remember, but a woman pioneer in politics. Ellen McCormick passed away on March 27th.
I'm Ellen McCormick, a Democratic candidate for president. Help me to keep these hearts beating. Together, we can help both the mother and her baby.
Vote Ellen McCormick in the Democratic presidential primary.
She was the first person I could think of who ran on entirely a pro-life / anti-abortion candidacy for president. She ran the Democratic primaries in 1976, got 238,000 votes in the primaries, but again, the first person to do that, to run on that cause for president.
And by the way, we found out from our crack research staff that Michigan State beat Florida in 2000. So
right, and there was a switchover in Florida as well.
Interesting.
Bill Nelson won that seat.
We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. Up next, the blame game on the budget. If the government shuts down on Friday night, who will get the blame? Our political columnist Michael Gerson will join us from the Washington Post. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. The political junkie is back with us. Ken Rudin wouldn't miss a budget showdown. NPR's political editor. You can read Ken's column, listen to his podcast, and do your best to solve his scuttle button puzzle, all at npr.org/junkie. If Congress can't agree on a 2011 budget or another stopgap measure, people will wake up Saturday with parts of the federal government shut down. Leaders from the House and Senate tried and failed to reach a deal yesterday. At the White House, the president took to the podium afterwards and complained that Republicans would not meet him halfway.
We can't have a my way or the highway approach to this problem, because if we start applying that approach, where I've got to get 110% of everything I want, or else I'm going to shut down the government, we're not going to get anything done this year. And the American people are going to be the ones that suffer.
The GOP, led by Speaker of the House John Boehner, pushed right back.
Now, we're not going to allow the Senate nor the White House to put us in a box where we have to make a choice between two bad options, cutting a bad deal this week in order to keep the government open, or allow the government to shut down.
Both parties point the finger at each other as the clock continues to tick down to midnight Friday. If there's a government shutdown, who will get the blame? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Michael Gerson, a former speechwriter for President George W. Bush, now a columnist for The Washington Post, where his column, Cornered by Obama, ran yesterday. And Michael Gerson, nice to have you back with us.
Great to be with you.
And John Boehner talked about not being put in a box. You wrote, that is precisely where he is.
I think he's precisely where he doesn't want to be. You know, I think the president has a pretty weak fiscal record, but he's in a strong negotiating position right now. He accepted a $33 billion $1 billion top line for reductions, which is pretty much what Republicans started out with as a negotiating position last February. And now, when they reject that, he's the one that seems like the moderate voice, the reasonable voice in this debate. And it pretty much assures that if there were a shutdown, which I still don't think is going to happen, that Republicans would get the lion's share of the blame.
Well, we're going to talk more about what's going on today. But tell us about this tactical box that John Boehner is in. You wrote that Barack Obama has achieved, from a very weak hand, you say, he's achieved the not insignificant task of splitting the Republican Party.
No, I agree with that. And the reality here is the Republican Party is split. That's why the president can make this kind of case. You have people like Paul Ryan that are very much focused on the 2012 budget, ambitious structural reform, Medicare reform, tax reform, a lot of other things. Then you have other Republicans, Tea Party freshmen and people like Mike Pence and others, who are very much focused on the 2011 budget and squeezing a few billion dollars extra out of this current situation. And that's I think that there's a difference in both stature, strategy, and sophistication between those two approaches. I think Ryan is much more ambitious, and I think Boehner needs to convince his own conference that that's the fight they want to focus on, not this one, the shutdown fight.
You mentioned the Tea Party. Amy Kramer, the chair of the Tea Party Express, told a Washington crowd she's not okay with any compromise on the budget.
I don't think it's a good thing to shut down our government. But I do think that they need to do what they said they were going to do. They said they were going to cut $100 billion. And they had time. They knew that they had won the House. They had time to work on this to figure out how to do it.
And you had not just the Tea Party spokespeople like that, but Mike Pence and Michelle Bachmann chanting, shut it down, shut it down.
Yes, I mean, both of those leaders are people that want to position themselves as rebel leaders to lead this kind of movement. But this is the problem. I mean, the House of Representatives is one half of one branch of government. It would normally, under normal circumstances, be seen as a very good deal to get $33 billion in cuts under these circumstances. They don't control both houses. And I think a lot of the committee chairmen, from what I've told, view it as a pretty good deal. But there's a significant portion of that base that has much higher expectations, which may be, in this circumstance, unrealistic expectations.
Ken?
Michael, in your column yesterday, which was absolutely excellent, you talk about how you see the very astute and great political skills of President Obama and the White House team led by Chief of Staff William Daley. But conversely, isn't it lack of political skills by the House Republicans and the lessons that they didn't learn from 95, 96 that we're seeing all over again?
Well, I think if they went towards a shutdown and accepted that rather than split the caucus, that would be a tremendous mistake. In this circumstance, you would literally cut off in the middle of a pay period the people in Afghanistan. That would be a tremendous signal. Now, that would probably be made up later, but it would be a terrible signal.
And tax day coming up right around the corner, too.
Exactly. I think Democrats could also make the case that this is bad for the broader economy.
It's going to cost money to have a shutdown.
Right, exactly. And also, just as we're headed into a little bit of a recovery, to have that kind of measure can't be good for the economy. And so I think there are going to be a bunch of arguments. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I'm not sure we're going to get there. I do believe that Boehner really wants to avoid a shutdown. He's already filed a bill in the House for another 1 week continuing resolution.
The president said he wouldn't sign it.
Well, I know, but he could bring that up on Friday, and that would be a very difficult thing to turn down under the right circumstances. That would just postpone briefly the problem. But I think that Boehner, at least, does not view a shutdown as a good strategy.
Speaker, though, could take that $33 billion, and there's some other issues that are involved, but he could take that to the floor and win with probably, 50, 60 Democratic votes and get it passed. It would cost him, though, the support of, well, that what some have called the perfectionist wing of the Republican Party.
Yes, and they're already looking at looking for excuses for discontent. And maybe there's not much you can do about that, but I think that Boehner does need to look like he's pushing for the last little bit before he makes a compromise. And, you know, he could maybe get up to $40 billion in negotiations, and he could take that to the Tea Party wing and say, I made progress.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. If there is a shutdown, who's going to get the blame? We'll start with Mary. Mary with us from Leavenworth in Kansas.
Yes, and I think it'll be the Democratic Party. They had control of Congress for the last couple of years, and they haven't even produced a budget of any sorts within that time. So it will be the Democrats that will pay. And Mr. Obama had all this time to work out something instead of taking vacation over here and there. He ought to be here, standing here to run this country and run it right instead of trying to take care of everybody else's country. Right. So it'll be the Democrats.
All right. Mary's got a point, Michael Gerson.
She does.
This is the 2011 budget. Right. It was supposed to be passed this time last year.
Right. I think there's a valid point there. When the Democratic Party controlled both houses, if they had passed a 2011 budget, we wouldn't be in this circumstance. You had both houses and the president in that position. So I think it's a valid critique. But I'm not right now, I think the political circumstance is quite different because the president does have an offer on the table to make this work.
Let's go next to Anna. Anna with us from Nashville.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I think at this point it is the Republicans. I'm not saying the Democrats are sometimes the gang that can't shoot straight, but in this case they have succeeded and the Tea Party has succeeded, so it's pushing from both sides in creating driving a spike in between the what had been the unassailable base of the Republican Party. And I think this is going to blow back on them in a very significant way, certainly in the next election cycle in Congress.
Anna, thanks very much for that.
Right. Well, yeah, I would only add to that, because I think there's a lot of truth in that, that Obama was able to do this by betraying his own base even before the debate started. You know, a $33 billion cut in the 2011 budget in February was dismissed by Senator Reid as draconian and unworkable.
And instead, he's got Chuck Schumer out there cheerleading
right,
for him now.
Exactly. And so the president moved a long way towards the Republican position even before the debate started. And liberals in the Congress, progressives in the Congress, seem to accept that without really much complaint. But it put the position, the president, in a good negotiating position.
Ken?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing and basically talking about who gets the blame there. But it seems like, aside from the Boehner company, it seems like the Tea Party wing of the party is looking for an ideological statement to make and saying, these are our principles. Unlike Obama and the Democrats, we're not willing to compromise. We stand up for what we believe in. Because you look at what Paul Ryan came up with, and he came up with this perhaps politically courageous, but maybe suicidal as well, this budget. But Obama and the Democrats have not responded in kind. I mean, what is the Obama plan? What is the Democrats' plan in addition, the opposite of what the Republicans are proposing?
Yeah, it's difficult for Republicans because, they certainly don't want a shutdown, but they're headed towards a fight that's going to be the most difficult fight, much more difficult than this year, if you're talking about Medicare reform and other things. And, I think, but also a more consequential fight than a few billion dollars just in this kind of spending.
That's about a few trillion dollars.
Right, yeah. It's the difference here. I mean, Ryan is talking about, over 10 years, several trillion dollars in savings. The Tea Party is talking about a few billion dollars in the current budget. And they're also stepping all over Ryan's story to some extent, the budget that's moving forward. So I think that more kind of serious establishment Republicans are concerned about that. But you have to remember that many of the Tea Party freshmen, they did not run so much against Democrats. They ran against the establishment of the Republican Party. And they're looking for the excuse to justify their suspicions.
Now, do you find that if the Republican presidential candidates are going to try to win the affections of the Tea Party and win the primaries, because the Tea Party has a lot of sway in the Republican primaries, as we learned last year, are they going to be painted as too far to the right come Election Day?
Well, I think there's been a little movement on that. Since the announcement of the Ryan budget, most of the intellectual conservative movement, most of the movement conservatives have really rallied around the Ryan budget. And I think a Republican presidential candidate is likely going to have to do that for whatever its risks.
None of them endorsed it. Not one single one.
That's true. But I do think it presents, to some extent, the platform for 2012. They're taking a wait-and-see attitude. But, everyone wanted Republicans who were just focused on domestic discretionary spending for this period was, everyone was saying, you've got to get serious. You know, the real money is not in discretionary spending. And then when they get serious, it's risky. but I think that that's the direction of Republican ideology right now. And it's a huge political risk. But it's also, in my view, it takes seriously this debt problem. We're going to see if this is a different political period than the past or not, whether Americans are willing to accept much larger solutions.
We're talking with Michael Gerson. He's a columnist for The Washington Post and formerly a speechwriter for George W. Bush. Of course, The Political Junkie is with us. You can read his column, download his podcast, and solve his scuttlebutt puzzle all at npr.org/junkie. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
Michael, you say that Paul Ryan's proposal, the $5.3 trillion cut over 10 years.
You can calculate that number any number of ways, right. Around $5
trillion. Okay, that's fine. Is serious, but at the same time, he does not touch revenue at all. He doesn't, like if you talk about what Simpson Bowles did, that commission, they talk about, yes, cutting spending, but also bringing revenue, raising taxes. But he won't touch the military, he won't touch the wealthy.
It may be bold, but he doesn't touch Social Security.
Right. So how serious is that?
Well, it's serious where it speaks. Let me put it that way. There are, by the way, some members of the Senate, Republican and Democrat, that want to embody the Simpson-Bowles approach, actually, in legislation.
We had two members of the Gang of Six on last week.
Right, in order to raise these kind of issues. I think there's a calculation to some extent that this is what Republicans bring to the table. It really would be a bridge too far to talk about major tax increases. And I've known, actually, Paul Ryan for a long time. He's a kind of Kemp growth-oriented Republican. He's not an austerity guy, even though he has a pretty, austerity-oriented budget. He really believes economic growth is going to be necessary to maintain in order to meet these goals and these figures. And he's convinced that tax policy is important to future economic growth. So, I mean, that's the argument. If you were to get a grand deal on these issues, it might have other elements.
Do you think if John Boehner ends up taking something closer to the Obama number than to his number of $40 billion, the Democrats say he keeps moving the goalposts. But anyway, if he ends up taking something closer to the Obama number, his original number, than to the number that the Tea Party asked, that he might face a rebellion from within his own party, even a challenge to his position as Speaker?
Well, I would say that there are at least three moving pieces to that. There's the top-line number, which is a matter of debate. There's the composition of the cuts, which they're arguing about, how much of it is kind of mandatory spending and how much of it is
one-time off.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. And then there's also the very controversial policy riders that have to do with abortion and other issues, Planned Parenthood, the NPR, variety of these issues. So there's a whole lot of moving parts in all that about whether he could get an agreement on that. If he were to essentially give up on all three of those, I think he would have a serious revolt. If he can make the case, well, I've gotten a better deal than was initially on the table. Now let's focus on the 2012 budget. He might bring along some freshmen there and divide the people that are dividing from the party. That's the goal. You're not going to get them all, but can you divide that Tea Party vote?
And we're talking about what we're talking about is the White House offer of $33 billion and the Tea Party demand of $40 billion. I mean, we're not talking about a major thing that could result in the shutdown of the government.
Or indeed reduce the deficit by a
right.
whole lot.
Right, well, that too.
Well, that's true. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. It's symbolic. You know, who's going to give in? Who's going to blink is really the question here. Who gets bragging rights? But there are some Tea Party people that would have preferred it to be much more than $40 billion and, pushed for $60 billion. And, we heard on the tape $100 billion in these contexts. And there, I think Boehner has been very forthright saying, I mean, I just control the House here. You know, there are other members of this government.
And we don't even know if he controls it.
Right. Yeah, that's the question.
And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Michael Gerson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it. Michael Gerson, the columnist for The Washington Post. Again, his piece ran in that newspaper yesterday. We did skip over one minor item of political news this week, and that was a declaration by one guy who, well, just might be running a pretty strong race for president of the United States. And that's, of course, Barack Obama, who announced in Chicago this week that he is going to be running his campaign out of there. And indeed, he starts to take money. And Ken Rudin, we're going to be focusing on this candidate a little bit more as time comes down. But he finds himself, interestingly, in a better position than he might have thought a couple of months ago.
Well, that's absolutely true. And the real question for voters in 2012 is whether this is a repeat of 2008, when there was a lot of dissatisfaction in the country against the Republicans, against Bush, Iraq, and Katrina, things like that, or this kind of dissatisfaction you saw in 2010 when it's directed at President Obama and the Democrats. So obviously he's hoping for the same kind of mojo that he had in 2008.
Ken Rudin, our political junkie, will be back with us next Wednesday, unless he's in Boise again. Thanks, Ken, as always.
Thank you, Neil.
We heard some discussion of the federal debt and the budget. We're going to continue our series of conversations about how to reduce or even eliminate it a day after the House Budget Chair releases his plan. Stay with us for that. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.